It's time to turn to the WUKY Sports page with your host, Keith Elkins, revealing conversations and stories you thought you knew from prominent Kentucky sports figures. Now, here once again is Keith Elkins.
Todd Svoboda is with us today. He was a Kentucky basketball Wildcat for one season, 1992-93, after transferring from Northern Kentucky University, where he had an outstanding career, scoring 1,114 points and grabbing 770 rebounds in 3 years. He didn't play a lot for the Wildcats, but was a very popular player at Kentucky and is still remembered for a three-pointer near the end of the Kentucky's NCAA tournament win over Florida State. Of course, that was a star-loaded Wildcat team that went on to the Final Four, led by Jamal Mashburn and coached by Rick Pitino. A great season in 92-93 to be part of the team. And we'll get back to basketball in a few minutes, but Todd has faced a battle with cancer that has now covered 11 years. And just last year, his right leg was amputated as a result of an infection that was related to a surgical procedure done before the early round of cancer treatment, chemotherapy, back in 2014. First of all, Todd, thanks so much for doing this. Thanks for being here today.
Yeah, happy to be here, Keith.
Well, let's talk about where you are currently in your battle and just in life in general. How do things stand for you right now?
Right now, things are going pretty well. Mm-hmm. Like you said, I had an amputation back in July of last year and then got my prosthetic leg around Thanksgiving time. So it's I'm still getting used to it, learning to walk in it, getting more steps each day. You know, being very active, swimming, still in the morning, doing weights, you know, right before work. Mm-hmm. But I'm getting scanned still, monitored with my doctor just to make sure nothing's come back. And, you know, so far the last scan's been good. So I know people pray, and that's a big, big answer that, you know, I've got another scan in December, and I pray that that one's a good result as well.
Yes, everybody anticipates nervously that next report, and then I'm sure you feel like when you get the good report, it's a great feeling at that point to get that.
Yeah.
Tell me about the start of the battle with cancer and what you faced, and also your team at UK. I know you were very proud of the people you worked with, and Dr. McDonald you mentioned in particular, but tell me about how that got started and how you went the first round, let's call it, with cancer.
Yeah, so it was back in 2014. I was playing competitive tennis here in Lexington and around the state of Kentucky, and even traveling to the regions if we did well. So playing pretty high-level tennis, and kind of noticed a bump on the inside of my right knee that didn't go away. At first, I thought it might be an orthopedic issue, so I went in to have it checked out. And quickly from there, got referred and had other tests. Met Patrick O'Donnell, who was my doctor. And you know, he gave me the bad news. My wife was there with me, that I had osteosarcoma, bone cancer, very rare form of that, which kind of, you know, takes you off your feet. It's not something you're expecting. But with, I guess, the athletic and background and such, you just figure out and get a game plan, and you kind of work toward, you know, getting through the treatments and, you know, what's ahead and doing the best you can.
And Dr. O'Donnell, I may have said McDonald, O'Donnell, Dr. Patrick O'Donnell led your team at UK, and you have to consult closely. Your family's involved. Take us a little bit through that as to how you wanted to plan what you were going to go through.
Right. So after, you know, the initial diagnosis with my wife and Dr. O'Donnell and his PA were in the room, you know, I wanted my family involved. I've got three kids. Mm-hmm. And so we sat down with them and said, we're going to go through this together, because it's not just going to affect me. It's going to affect the whole family. And, you know, Dr. O'Donnell has a great team of folks that help figure out what chemotherapy, you know, and the surgery that was going to follow. Is that going to go first? Is the chemo going to go first? But they chose to do the surgery first, which was kind of a mega prosthesis, what you would say, a knee replacement, but it's much more than that. It was almost my whole right leg had a scar all the way up my leg. And so it was a tough surgery. But to be honest with you, the chemotherapy is was really rough, because what they prescribe for osteosarcoma is not easy. You know, I know chemotherapy is not easy, whoever's going through it, but it really took me off my feet. And we just took one round at a time, and thankfully, you know, at that time I still was in good shape, which the doctor said, you know, helps you fight that. Mm-hmm. But there's only so much you can do, because there's some days where I just, you know, there's not much I could do. It just kind of took you out.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, a lot of former athletes, you try to stay in shape. You try to play sports at as high a level as you can, even as you get older. And so for that reason, it becomes even more of a shock or a setback to not be able to do those things. Again, I guess that's where family and friends and all the support that you have come in, because it's a shock in every way. Lifestyle change, your medical condition, all of those things are such a rough thing to go through. You got to have some help.
Yeah. No, thankfully I have a great family, a great wife, children, friends, and, you know, church that, you know, prays, and, you know, even Big Blue Nation. People that don't even know me or know of my name, I just, you know, I'm thankful for all the prayers and support, even encouraging words to just go along the way, because each day is rough. Mm-hmm. And when you have a good support system, that really helps.
And you went through this initial round of chemotherapy, and it was 10 years before the infection set in and requiring the amputation. But in those 10 years, you had some other battles, too. It wasn't just a 10-year interim that was quiet for you, right?
Right. I think after a few years after the initial, I can't remember the exact time, but then I had a reoccurrence two or three times in between that. So one was more surgery, one was more chemo, or two surgeries, one on the leg. I had some on the lungs. More chemo and more radiation. So there were some battles along the way. And, you know, so it that was not easy.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. I guess you, especially in your role as a former UK player, former college athlete, you have an opportunity to talk to not only young athletes, but others in general who may have gone through something similar or are going through something similar. Is that something that has been a part of your life here these last few years?
It has, yeah. I've reached out to a few, even people at UK that have had the same thing that I've gone through. One was a UK golfer, one I believe was on the dance team that had something similar. I've got a close neighbor that's going through something similar as well, and I just try to reach out and encourage them, answer questions, or just be an encouragement to them, whatever I can do, because I know how much that means, you know, when you're going through something like this.
Now, you have had an opportunity to resume some activities. You still stay active physically as much as is possible. What does that mean today as far as the activities that you can do?
Yeah. No, I was back in the pool 6 weeks after the amputation, swimming, mm-hmm. Lifting weights in the morning. I'm on a road bike again. I got my bike kind of altered to kind of fit and be able to do that versus a stationary bike. Can't run or play competitive tennis. I've kind of switched over to maybe some pickleball.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a little bit easier for me. But I'm doing as much as I can, you know, keeping the lawn mowed around the house, splitting wood, just the normal things that I used to do. I'm trying to get back to those as normal as possible. It's not exactly the same, but I try to stay active and just keep pushing myself.
Yeah, and at the same time that you're able to resume those things, there are also, I guess, 100 little things during the day that you now notice that you wouldn't have noticed back before 2014. Maybe give me an example, if you could, of something that might have been a routine chore in those days that now requires some thought or planning or maybe even some help.
Yeah, so just for instance, here in a day or two after work, I'm going to be changing oil in my vehicle. You know, just getting down and getting back up just to get a tool or get a rag or whatnot, just up and down. I can still do it. It just takes me a little bit longer. Mm-hmm. So you just got to figure out the best way to do things. It may take you a little bit longer, but you still want to do them if possible. You know, still be safe, but I'm going to do as much as I can. Just takes me longer, and I'll figure out a way to do it.
Mm-hmm. Well, as I mentioned, we'll get to basketball in a few minutes, but I also want to ask you about your career in engineering, and one of the things that you have to resume after an experience like this is how do you get back to work, and what are you able to do there? Have there been some setbacks or restrictions there, or have you been able to resume a workload now?
Yeah, that's a good question. So the initial diagnosis, I was working at Lexmark here in Lexington, and I was able to work remotely for a while there. Could not do any traveling, so I had to have somebody fill in to do some traveling for me while I worked remotely from home. But then I was back to traveling after the surgery and chemo. And now I'm currently at East Kentucky Power, and kind of the similar situation where there was times I could not go in the field, which I still do go to one of our generating facilities, and one of my teammates would step up and do that for me. But, you know, I'd still be able to work remotely and get the majority of the stuff done until I could get, you know, the restriction or the clearance to go back in the field after surgery or after the amputation. So, you know, I've had good teams to work with. I still wanted to keep working. And when I was going through this stuff, it kind of kept my day normal, my mind going. And I wanted to do as much as I was allowed to do until I got clear to continue to back to my normal routine, which I am now.
Yeah, and you have a degree in engineering, chemical engineering, yep, from the University of Kentucky. And actually, there was a lot more than basketball involved in your transfer from Northern Kentucky. I believe a joint degree program, but it fit right into your achieving your goal to get the engineering degree. Tell me about that.
Yeah, it was called a pre-engineering or a 3-2 program with Northern Kentucky. You do 3 years at Northern and then transfer the last two to UK to finish your engineering degree. It was something similar I looked at Illinois, too. They were recruiting me, Southern Illinois. I could have started there and then transferred to Illinois, kind of the same thing. But, of course, Kentucky was always in my blood. And growing up in Cincinnati, I'm right, always a UK fan. I got to play 3 years at Northern. I had a good career under Coach Kenny Shields. Still stay in touch with him. Great, great man, great coach. And then played tennis at Northern, too. And then, but I wanted to finish my engineering degree, so I needed to transfer to UK. And so I transferred in the summer and then did some summer classes, talked to the UK coaching staff, worked out with them in the summer. And then in the fall, started school and, you know, athletics.
Mm-hmm. And engineering is a tough academic load, even without major college basketball also being part of your daily schedule. And so you met that challenge. And we were talking before we started recording about some of the faculty members that you recall from UK. And I would think, especially with the additional workload of being a basketball player, you have to have a good relationship with your faculty and be able to call on them and work with them more closely than just being in class. But tell me about some of the people who were important to your finishing up that engineering degree at UK.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. You know, with basketball, there's traveling when SEC starts, and, you know, of course, the NCAA tournament when that gets here as well. So, you know, I knew I'd be missing some class. So I had great teachers. I think some of them are still teaching, such as DB or Dr. Bhattacharya still there, Dr. Kim Anderson and Dr. Doug Kalika. So I would just let them know, hey, I'm going to be missing this day and assignment. And then, you know, as we were traveling on the airplane or at the hotel, I'd have my books out. You know, I had no time, no downtime. It was constant, utilizing every minute that I had each day to study, prepare, do my assignments and such. And, you know, just good communication and collaboration with them. And they were all for it. They enjoyed an engineer doing athletics, it wasn't easy. Mm-hmm. In fact, you know, at the beginning of the season, I met some people, and they were saying, I don't know if it's possible, some chemical engineering students. Mm-hmm. And I had a talk with my father, who was a chemical engineer. He played tennis at Purdue. And he's like, Todd, you're going to travel more than I did when I was there. But he said, if you don't try it, you won't know if you can make it. He says, you may look back and regret it. And he says, you may not get all A's. You may get a B here and there. And he said, it's okay. He was like, you know, this is a good experience. You know, go for it. So that's the encouragement I think I needed to say, yeah, I'm going to give it all I can, and we'll see where this goes.
Mm-hmm. One of the things about engineers, and I worked at the College of Engineering at UK for several years in communications, was not an engineer, of course, but wrote about what they did. And it seemed like a common thread among many engineers was when they were small children, they had an intense curiosity about how things worked. If they had a toy, it wasn't just playing with the toy. It was, how does this work? Can I take this apart and put it back together again? Is that you at all?
Absolutely. Yeah. When I see something, I want to know how it works or how it's built. You know, was just talking with a friend the other day where they made a little thing for a baby shower, and it was really cute. And I started asking about the structure. You know, it had baby shoes and it had clothes hanging on. I said, well, how is that attached to this?
Yeah.
And he said, there's the engineer coming out in you. So, yeah, I always want to know how things are made or how they work. And then obviously it helps you fix them, too, if something goes wrong, because I like to try to fix anything I can. And if you know how it works, that makes it a lot easier.
Oh, yeah. Now, we've talked a little bit about your interest in other sports in addition to basketball. And I say interest, I mean, you were seriously pursuing some other sports, particularly tennis. But you told me about a third sport that was in there, too. Tell me about the career athletically in addition to basketball.
Yeah, not many people know, but when I was in high school, it was my sophomore year. I was watching, either freshman or sophomore year, I was watching the Olympics, and I saw water polo. And I was like, that really interests me. And I told my dad, I said, I'm going to go out for water polo. My high school had a water polo team, had a pool and, of course, swim team and then water polo. So I figured I probably had the hand-eye and the ball skills, but I really had to pick up my swimming, and it was good conditioning. So I went out for water polo, played my sophomore year at JV, and then junior and senior year at varsity, and became one of the best players in the state. And got several offers on the East and West Coast, which normally where the water polo schools are, to play basketball and water polo. It really intrigued me, and I had to evaluate that, but I chose to do basketball and tennis. But I still really enjoy water polo and swimming, as I still swim today. I think it's a great exercise that's easy on the body, but really gives you a good workout, cardio and mentally as well. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, now the interest in water polo, what specifically or more specifically attracted you to that? I mean, you had an interest in swimming, of course, but I guess a chance to combine swimming and another type of competition. But what attracted you to
it? It had a ball, right?
Yeah.
So, and the guy right in front of the goal, they call it the hole man. They throw the ball in there, and I watched on the Olympics, and that guy was getting dunked, and there's people hanging on top of him. And I'm like, I kind of enjoyed the roughness of that.
Yeah.
And I said, that's the position I want to try. You know, I had long arms, and that you realize when you're in that position, you don't just have to tread water to keep you up. You can either have to keep one more person hanging on you, or sometimes two.
Mm-hmm.
Catch the ball, turn with them on you, and try to shoot and score. So that was a challenge, and I really liked that position and excelled at it as I learned that over the years.
Yeah, and of course in tennis now you're what, 6'8"?
6'8".
Yeah, so you're going to have a lot of range, but at the same time you got to combine some quickness in there too. Was tennis a challenging game to
Yeah, court? I like doubles the most. In fact, I think you may have interviewed Kyle Macy. He was
yes.
a tennis player as well.
Yeah.
So we were actually doubles partners for a while.
Okay.
You know, of course after college and some of the leagues and. I think we nobody liked to lob us. I enjoyed when people liked to try to lob us because we were pretty good at that, and we played very well together. But it's a great sport, very mental. My dad really taught me a lot about the mental game because you could watch a tennis match, and you could see somebody win the first set 6-love or 6-0 and then lose the next one 0-6. I'm like, that's just like a switch, right?
Yeah.
It's very mental, and he taught me a lot about the mental game of sports through tennis. And I applied that in other areas and other sports, and that was a very valuable lesson. And I love the teamwork of doubles. I love the serve and volley. I love the quick reactions at the net. That's what I really enjoyed. So that is one thing I miss, that I really can't play to the level, of course, that I used to. So tennis is dear to my heart. Both my parents were tennis players in college, so. I grew up around the tennis ball.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, you excelled in basketball and chose that as the primary sports path for you there in college. And at Northern Kentucky University, had an outstanding career there. But tell me about your development as a basketball player. Now, some guys have growth spurts and some guys have steady growth. What was yours? Were you ever in the category of a project where you were maybe too tall for basketball skills at the time, or how did that work for you?
Yeah, that's a good question. For me, I think I was more of a steady grower.
Mm-hmm.
I grew all the way through freshman year in college, because when I entered college, I was 17. My birthday kind of lied on that, where I could either start or I can wait a year.
Mm-hmm.
And my parents thought I was ready academically, so I was one of the younger ones in my class. It just steadily grew. One of my best friends in high school was taller than me in junior high, and that, he stopped at junior high.
Yeah.
But I kept going all the way, and I think I was listed as 6'8" going into college. I may have been 6'7", 6'7 and a half, and grew just a little bit more through my freshman year in college. So I was pretty steady, never did have that real huge growth spurt, stayed pretty coordinated. You know, had to work on a few foot speed and a few skills like that. But, you know, I think overall it was a good progress and a good challenge.
And you went to high school in Cincinnati at Princeton?
Princeton High School, yeah.
And so what was the recruitment process like there as you became a basketball prospect?
Yeah, I didn't really, you know, usually you get recruited as freshman, sophomore in high school. I didn't really get any varsity time until my senior year. So my process started a little bit later. I got a new coach as a senior year, Coach Jim Stahl, and great system to play under, and you know, got some time. Then I started getting some interest with some schools, you know, of course, Northern Kentucky and some up in Ohio and such. And I enjoyed the process. I watched my sister go through it. She was a really good basketball player as well, 6'3 and a half. They won the state title. She was recruited as a freshman, so I kind of watched that whole process and such, and enjoyed the recruiting. It's a little different nowadays with you know, internet and things like that, where you can see people. But I enjoyed getting to know the coaches and the players and doing a few visits and such. And then, of course, Coach Kenny Shields was a very successful high school coach at Highlands up in Northern Kentucky, and then took over NKU. I think it was his second year. I was his first recruit in his recruiting class. He inherited a team his first year, and then second year was his recruits, and I was his first recruit there. And, you know, that's special to be, you know, his first recruiting class and still stay in touch with him and such.
Yeah, and that's close to home, but not just right around the corner either. So you're able to gain a little independence, I would assume, and then also develop as a basketball player.
Yeah. It wasn't probably 25, 30 minutes from my home. And so on a weekend, I can go up there if I needed to. But mostly I stayed down at school, you know, bonded with the players and friends, and kind of just wanted to start my college career, and, you know, both athletically and academically.
And when did the engineering arrangement come into real focus for you? Was that while you were at NKU, or did you have that in mind even before you went to college?
Yeah, no, I knew right away in my senior year of high school what I wanted. I wanted to be like my dad. He was a chemical engineer, and so I knew my path right away. So I already had the classes lined up. I had the plan lined up to get it done, and that's kind of what I went for.
And then, of course, it comes time to make that decision, or the transfer time, and Rick Pitino is starting to build UK back up. Tell me about that connection and how things rolled along there in terms of your recruitment and transfer to UK.
Yeah, so it was his fourth season at UK. His first season, of course, you know, I think he had half walk-ons, half scholarship player because of what he took over. But you just can't go to Kentucky and try to walk on or try to get a scholarship, because, like, every person growing up in Kentucky, they want that same opportunity.
Right.
So I had to send some of my tapes to the staff to review, to give me the opportunity to, quote, try out for the team. And then I transferred down in the summer and played, you know, open gym with some of the players, got to know them as much as I could and try to understand what I needed to work on. Of course, my coach at NKU, you know, he reminded me that, you know, I could stay that fourth year at NKU and be the only player that scores 1,000 points and 1,000 rebounds, you know, in the history of the basketball, which I love rebounding. That was one of my favorite things to do. But my main purpose going to school was academics. And, you know, I wanted to finish my degree and had the opportunity, of course, to be a Wildcat and to play for Coach Pitino, which, you know, was incredible. And the players that he had, it was just an experience I wanted to go for.
Tell me about your first meeting with him. Do you recall a first face-to-face meeting with him?
Yeah. At first, I met with his assistant coach, Coach Bernadette Maddox, in her office as I was transferring to in summer classes, and just to get to know when I can get in the gym to play and practice and things like that. But I remember I went up into his office, and we chatted about, you know, the opportunities I'd have that year. And he's Coach P is very honest, which is the way I like it. I like to know where I'm at, regardless if it's with on a team or at work. You know, I like honesty. And he was like, Todd, you realize that, you know, in your position is Jamal Mashburn, an All-American that's going to go pro. He's already knew he was going to go pro after his junior season, pretty much. He was like, he's going to be a lottery pick, and so you're not going to start. He says, I know you scored 1,000 points and close to 1,000 rebounds. And he says, but he's in your position and you're not going to start. He says, I want you to be aware of that. You can sit out a year and then play the following year. And I, you know, I had to weigh that decision, but I wanted to play right away. I wanted to learn. I was fine being his backup and going against Jamal in practice every day, learning from the best. I mean, it's great. I mean, I learned more that year than I ever imagined, even though I didn't start a game. You know, just playing against that competition, learning the skills, the strategy. And I mean, Jamal Mashburn had this one classic kind of hesitation crossover move that you knew he was going to do. You still couldn't stop it, and other players couldn't either on other teams. It was just so smooth. And but I learned so much that I'm like, yeah, I want to play this year, and I'm fine with whatever role I need to do, I'll do.
And I'm sure he appreciated that. It's always nice to have guys to know their roles. And I was going to ask you about going up against Mashburn in practice, because I would think you have to redefine what a good day is in practice, because chances are in going up against Jamal Mashburn, you're going to come out on the short end most of the time as far as the actual competition. But at the same time, your goal is to help make him better, and by virtue of that, help make the team better. That's probably hard to accept sometimes in some days in practice. But tell me about how you approach that.
Yeah, I mean, that was my goal, is to say, hey, I'm going to make Jamal better, or whoever else I'm going up against better. I'm not gonna make it easy on them. I'm gonna make them work, just because it's gonna be like that in the game, and I want to make everybody better around. So there was not a day where I'm like, oh, I'm just gonna go through the motions. Well, first of all, Patino wouldn't let you do that. Mm-hmm. Second of all, that's just not my nature. I want to push whoever I'm going against. Yeah, he's better than I am, but I want to get better, and if I get better, I'm gonna make him better. And then whoever else, maybe I switch off Jamal on a screen or something like that. I'm gonna make whoever else better. I'm gonna make them work. And we all did that. You know, I think Patino got the most out of his players, and that's one of the things as a coach I think he did better than I think anybody, is get them maximize their potential. You know, that could be from conditioning. I mean, we were one of the best conditioned teams, you know, around. Games were easy. You know, mm-hmm. Practices were brutal.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's just something you don't need talent for. You just need to work hard and have desire. And then that just, I think, made the players he had even better.
Was there a day when things weren't going well for you that Patino, well, you drew his attention, let's say? Was there something, anything that stands out there?
Absolutely. I mean, there's days in practice where, you know, practices, like I said, they're just brutal and tough. And that's why I'm not going to draw it to the military, but when you got guys beside you going through that battle, it helps you get through it, right? Mm-hmm. Those teammates. But I remember we had a trip to New York, Madison Square Gardens, over the Christmas, the ECAC Chemical Classic. First time I was in New York, I was rooming with a player. Patino time is 15 minutes or before. You're dressed, you are ready, you're taped up, you're ready to go. You're not lacing your shoes, you're all ready to go. And we had breakfast at the hotel at, I don't even, 8 o'clock or whatever time it was. And the roommate I was rooming there with that time, he wanted to brush his teeth. He had beautiful white teeth. And I'm like, come on, we got to go downstairs, we got breakfast. He's like, I got to brush my teeth. And I could have left him there by himself, but I'm like, no, I'll stay here with him. Well, we were late. We walk into that breakfast area, and it's silent. The whole team is like staring at us, like, oh, you all are in trouble. And Patino, of course, we were in trouble. He was like, you and so-and-so need to start walking. This is where Madison Square Garden is. He says, it's on this street and this street. You better get there right before the bus gets there, or you're going to be in real trouble. So we basically had to leave and walk to Madison Square Gardens without breakfast, beat the team bus there. And so we get out of the hotel, and he was like, hey, let's get a cab. I said, no, we're not going to get in trouble. I said, you follow me. I said, I'll get us there. I mean, because the streets are somewhat chronological, right? Mm-hmm. And so once I found somewhat of a direction, which I'm pretty decent at, he followed me, and we got to Madison Square Gardens. And then thankfully, I look, and the team bus is pulling up, and we beat them there barely. That was really probably the first time I remember catching Coach P's attention on the bad side, which you don't want to be on this bad side. And of course, then we had practice, you know, before the game and such. But I was like, that ain't going to happen again.
Yeah. Well, that was just an incredible team. And you talked about the conditioning that he emphasized, and that was a big weapon for his teams, especially in that era. They would just get out on teams and just crush them sometimes in the first few minutes. And you're playing with some incredible athletes. What was the feeling as you went through that season and you saw just how good this team really could be?
Yeah, like you said, you know, if we didn't get out in front of a team and they kind of hung with us in the first half, second half, we'd definitely separate from them typically. Mm-hmm. And you really started to see that team gel. I mean, you know, we had the 20-hour rule, but then over Christmas break, I believe the rule was not, you know, when school's not in session, that didn't count. So I remember getting up in the morning, eating breakfast with the team, practicing, eating lunch with the team, practicing in the afternoon, eating dinner, and having a light practice in the evening, more of a walkthrough. Didn't have Christmas off, didn't have Christmas Eve off, didn't have New Year's. We didn't have a day off. We practiced every single day. But I noticed after that how we really gelled and just knew where, I mean, you just know where that teammate's going to be because you are with them. And we just, I mean, I know when Cal was coaching, they called it Camp Cal maybe over Christmas. They got a few days off. We didn't get a single day off. In fact, we practiced more. But I really noticed after that, you know, after the start of the year, we really, and that's when SEC kind of kicks in, we gelled as a team. We became just coherent. And I was like, wow, that really paid off. That hard work really does pay off. And it was fun. It became really fun after that.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, there were times when that team would jump on other teams early. But as you say, if the other teams hung around, sometimes they're hitting some threes and the score stays close, or maybe even the other team's ahead by a little bit. But eventually you reach that what seemed to be a wall for the other team with about 10 minutes to go, and the Kentucky players are ready for the last 10 minutes, and the other team wasn't, and they would really blow some teams out then. It was, as a fan, it was a lot of fun to watch that, because after a while, we knew it was coming. We could see it, too, as we'd see the reactions of the other players, but it must have been fun to watch that unfold. And also, I would think that has to give you additional motivation to carry on those tough practices, because now you're seeing some results.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't just like watching that style of play as a fan. I always enjoyed as a big man getting up and down the court in a fast style of pace. Mm-hmm. So kind of in that era, besides UK, UNLV was definitely the running Rebels for sure at that time under Coach Tarkanian. They had the fast break perfected, and they were so fun to watch. And I liked playing in that style. That was one advantage as a big man that I liked. I would get up and down the floor and get an easy bucket or two a game just because I'd outrun the other big man, or grab a rebound or catch a pass, you know, ahead. But knowing that, you know, the condition and those hard work and practices is going to pay off in a game, you know, that was comfort in knowing that and being able to do that and knowing that, yeah, we've been through that pain and it's paying off, and watch another team kind of lose their breath or get their hands on their shorts, you know, and or if they're not that deep, you know, they're going to struggle.
As I mentioned earlier, you became a very popular player. It was a very popular team at that time, but you're coming in late in the ball game sometimes, and maybe the game has been decided, but you actually put up some pretty good numbers for the few minutes that you got in there, and in fact, 10 for 16 field goals, is that right?
Yeah.
And 1 for 1 on three-pointers. We'll talk about that in a second, but you had 17 rebounds in 38 minutes, so you were taking those minutes seriously when you got in there.
Yeah, I wanted to be productive. The one stat that is not normally me is my free throw percentage was not where I normally had it. But other than that, you know, the rebounds, I like, you know, I love to rebound, of course, and I scored some points and be productive. And I just wanted to make my time count out there. And I enjoyed, the crowd getting behind me. Mm-hmm. there was one time, I think it was down at Ole Miss, even the Big Blue Nation started chanting, "We want Todd," down at Old Miss, and Patino comes over to him and he was like, "Todd, tell him to be quiet. I'm like, Coach, I can't. He was like, all right, get in the game. So he had a little bit of fun with it too. I think people saw that I just truly enjoyed being there. And, you know, knowing that I was going to do whatever I needed to do to make that team happy, I was, you know, I'd cheer, you know, when we made a three. I would congratulate the players. I'd try to encourage them if they're having a tough game or whatnot, you know. And I think people could see that I enjoyed it, that, you know, that was what Kentucky basketball is about or what a teammate should be. And that's what I wanted to do. And I truly was having fun. It was an enjoyment to be able to do that and to meet different fans across, you know, the state of Kentucky, as well as when you travel, the folks that are Kentucky fans at the different arenas, I would always try to talk to them, get to know them, just those kind of things, because I still do that. I like to get to know people, and that was a joy that I really, it was fun to do.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about the fan reaction, and not just during that season, but in all these years since then. Let's first talk about the three-pointer against Florida State. That was one of those games in the NCAA tournament, and that team was really rolling there at the first couple of weekends of the NCAA tournament, and again, just winning by wide, wide margins. You hit a three late in the ball game, and fans still come up to you and talk to you about that, but tell me about that moment.
Yeah, that's a special moment. I mean, there's some hotels that I'd be in. I remember down at Vanderbilt when we were down there, they're like, hey, Todd, when are you going to shoot a three? And they knew that, you know, on Patino's team, if you could shoot a three, you had the green light. I mean, I think there may have been only one or two players that did not have the green light on our team. And we would shoot 100 threes a day, you know, in individual practice. So, I mean, I could shoot a three. I shot a few at Northern. I think I was 2 for 3 at Northern. But I said, when I get the opportunity, I'm not going to force it. When I'm open, I'm going to shoot a three. And then, as I mentioned, you know, over Christmas, you really gelled with the players. You just knew where they were going to be when you were passing the ball or when the ball was coming to you. And I can remember that so vividly. Brasso got the ball, and I was on the right wing at the three, and I knew it was coming to me. I just knew it from just being all the practice, and that ball came to me, and I knew I was open. I said, I'm going to launch it. Yeah. And so it felt really good, and got the arc on it I needed. I squared up, as you know, I'm taught, and got some, you know, it was good form, good technique, and I gave every chance for that ball to go in. And of course, it went in, nothing but net. And you know, the team was so excited for me, and I'll never forget that three. And a lot of fans will say, "Hey, I'll never forget that three that you hit." And even the younger ones that may not have been born, you can YouTube it and look it up, and they're like, "Oh, that's really cool."
Yeah, that's great. That's a good thing about YouTube. Yeah. That's one of those good things that so many things are preserved on video now. You mentioned several times relationships with teammates. I'm sure with all you've been through over the last 10 years that your former teammates have been part of your support network as well, haven't they, and your coaches?
Yeah. There's some players that I've seen more often than others. There's some that I haven't seen, and you know, just until a few years ago, that, you know, like some have been coaching, such as Travis Ford, and, you know, Dale Brown's local. I'll see him and others. But it's great to have that support, even just a text or reaching out during my tough time, or just getting together and laughing about the hard times, the hard practices, or some of the stories that we had as a team. It's just great to get together and kind of relive that, and just enjoy each other still, because, you know, there's still a lot of us that are pretty close. And it was great to see Coach P back last year at, you know, Big Blue Madness for Coach Pope. Got to see him in person for the first time in several years. I used to go see Coach P at Louisville once a year. I'd go to one game just to go see him in his office and sit and chat and catch up for just a couple minutes and then watch a game. But then this was the first time it's been a few years since I've seen him in person, and it was great to see Coach P and his former players catching up with him, and the reception he got while he was here, you know, because he's done so much for this program, you know, when he took it over and brought it up to just a fun program to watch and just competitive for a national title, you know, multiple years, and just great success. And he put a lot of effort into the players. I think that's why we put a lot of effort in as players. The coaching staff did. They didn't just play pickup ball at 5 a.m. They were, our scouting reports were so detailed, and so they were so prepared. So they worked just as hard on their end as far as preparing us, you know, as players to face each team. So, you know, the camaraderie is great. to see each other, to support each other, and just to get together. It's so much fun, such a blessing.
And it seems like we're headed into an exciting era of UK basketball now under Mark Pope. What are your thoughts as you see this new program unfold?
I'm excited to see what this year holds. I mean, he came in last year, didn't have a whole lot of time, didn't have a staff, didn't have any players hardly, you know, and to what he, I guess, put together last year was fun to watch. I really enjoyed it. This year he's had more time, and, you know, people that he recruits, when you meet Mark or you know Mark, he's genuinely interested in you as a player, as a person, not just the coaching the game of basketball, which I think he got from Patina, but the game of life. And people see the genuineness of Mark Pope and his staff. And so this year he's had more time to assemble some great, great transfers, some recruits, you know, and some that are coming back. And I'm excited to see what this year holds. You know, it's going to be fun.
Okay. Well, let me close by asking your thoughts that you might pass along, not only to people who might be in your situation, but also just to people who are concerned about you. What message would you have for those in the battle and for those who are concerned about you?
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, everybody's going to face battles. It's just a matter of what battles you're going to face. Life, you know, is not fair. It gives you bumps. You face challenges. You know, having a good support team, friends, teammates, spouses. My faith is my most important thing. You know, having the hope of eternal life through Jesus is the most important thing. And having a good church and people that will be there no matter what. Somebody you can call on and they will be there. And, you know, that can be at your church, it can be through your family, it can be through friends, it could be through teammates. You can't go through it alone. It can be lonely, it can be difficult. You have ups and downs, but when you go through those battles, as we all will, have that support that you know you can draw from and help you get through it. And when you see others that you care about, be there for them. You know, it's a two-way street. I've always tried to be there for people and at any time if they need me. And now in 2014, I really need to draw on support from others. So just be there for people and people will be there for you. Just use that support system.
All right. Thanks very much for doing this today. I appreciate it.
Happy to be here, Keith.
You've been listening to the WUKY Sports Page with your host, Keith Elkins, an exclusive podcast from 91.3 WUKY, produced at the WUKY studios by Alan Lytle. Our theme music is Peanut Butter and Jam by Illogical Bit, available at soundcloud.com/illogicalbit. Subscribe to the Sports Page through iTunes, Google Play, or at our website, wuky.org.